Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to join our conversations on the exchange, you're more than welcome to do that. Phone numbers here, 800-838-3760. That's our number anywhere in the listening area. Our local number for Rogue Valley listeners, 541-552-6782. And our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Think of the sense of relief you feel when you're out on the open road. It's been a while since you visited the facilities and you see that big blue sign, rest area ahead. Are rest areas and other travel amenities the public kind, keeping up with our needs? That's the question that motivated the people at Oregon Travel Experience, OTE, to take to the road over the summer travel season just completed. Let's talk about what they went looking for and what they found. We have two people with us from Oregon Travel Experience. Maddie McGregor is Communication Officer. Welcome, Maddie.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thanks for having us.
You bet. Annie Von Damas is with us as well, a Community Assets Officer with OTE. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Jeffrey. It's nice to be here.
Can one of you tell us, first of all, a little bit about OTE and its history? And it's a semi-independent state agency, I see. How semi and what formed and from what?
I think I can take this one, Jeffrey. This is Maddie McGregor, and we were formed in 1972 by the Oregon Legislature, and we actually at that time only handled highway signs. So any of the blue and white logo signs that you see for essential services that help direct motorists off the highway when they're traveling, that's us. And that all came about from the 1965 Highway Beautification Act. It was Lady Bird Johnson's baby, and she wanted to get rid of all of the billboard clutter that had been on the highways, and having a blue sign, which maintains logos and helps visitors get off the freeway, that we were one of the first states to adopt that.
And so, Annie Von Damas, when we talk about the community assets, your community assets officer, it's more than just the blue signs, though, that OTE oversees, correct?
It is, yeah. And we did the signs, like Maddie said, for a long time. And then in 1991, the legislature asked us to take over the Oregon Historical Marker Program, which had been run by ODOT. And it just became too much. You know, they had all these other responsibilities, and the historical markers became sort of neglected. And so we took that over and formed some committees around that. And then in 1995, we took on the Oregon Heritage Tree Program, which highlights trees that are directly connected to Oregon heritage and history. And so we have a committee, advisory committee around that as well. So we're used to involving community members and historians and tourism folks to tell the story of Oregon's history and heritage to motorists as they come through the state. So that connection of motorists and what makes Oregon interesting, the communities and the heritage are really where our mission lies. So it was a natural, you know, progression then to provide community coalitions around rest areas too when we started doing those.
So is OTX responsible for the maintenance and upkeep of the rest areas or more just for the information provided at them?
We manage 20 rest areas across the state, Jeff. And those ones that we manage, we have on-ground staff who can help motorists. They live in the area where they work, so they're able to tell motorists about interesting things to see and do. They maintain the grounds. They keep the rest areas clean.
And so what was the purpose of the burst of activity over the summer from OTE, Oregon Travel Experience? Maddie?
Well, we knew that a lot of our infrastructure is aging. We inherited the rest areas from the Oregon Department of Transportation. And we know that the information structures in general, they're sort of these isolated little kiosks off to the side that have travel information. These are aging. They were built sometime in the 1970s and 1980s. So they have a very dated look. They're very static. There's nothing that's digital inside of them, so that if a traveler wanted to, let's say, kind of, you know, surf where's the most local place to stay or to eat, they wouldn't be able to find that within the kiosk. So we wanted to know just how much was ahead of us and what kinds of our shared partners we'd need to involve to help us move forward, to deliver a new look, a new feel, something that's much more in keeping with technology.
And so Annie von Dommitz, is the focus more on improving the total scope of what goes on at the rest areas or more on the information provided at them?
I would say both. I think that they're both really key for motorists coming through. You know, we need to have something that is beautiful and welcoming and safe for motorists as they come through. This is often one of the first places that they stop, you know, as a rest area. They may be moving through the state. They may not have been to a local community yet. And so we need to provide a space that's welcoming for them and hopefully inspire them to get off of the interstate and into our great little communities that they may not see otherwise. And so our drive is ultimately safety first, safety and cleanliness, but then also if we can inspire travelers to want to stay or get into the communities, that's where our partners really help us out because they know the communities best.
In addition to discussions about modernizing what you have now and making more of an engaging experience for the people who stop at these areas, is there also any discussion of acquisition, about providing new ones? I mean, for example, the northbound I-5 rest area just over the border from California closed down years ago, and there really isn't a replacement for it yet.
Yes, that's Suncrest, I believe, at milepost 22, Jeff.
Which is the southbound one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Siskiyou rest area,
right.
I think is the one you're talking about.
Yeah. There is a state parks-owned rest area, too. But the first one, really, that travelers would see would be Manzanita that we manage. So Suncrest right now is still ODOT's asset, mm-hmm. and we don't have any plans at this time. It's not completely off the table, but, you know, we have to move forward with the budget that we've been given, and it doesn't include Suncrest at this time.
All right, so that's an interesting mix then, because you still have ODOT managing some of the rest areas and Oregon mm-hmm. Travel Experience some of the others.
Yes. It takes a real partnership between us. You know, it really does take all players, and I think that's what's key. It's not about what one agency does better than another. It's simply how we can coordinate, how we manage, and how we're going to all be together at the table when we discuss how this information system is going to look. I mean, we really want an integrated system across the state. I don't know if you've seen the rest area on Highway 97 near Klamath Falls.
Not lately.
Okay. It's called Midland, and that was a project that ODOT initiated, and it kind of has a mini visitor center, which is run by the Oregon Travel Tourism
Oregon.
Commission. Yeah, excuse me, Travel.
Try to give your own agency name.
Yeah, I apologize. But it's a fabulous model. It really is of what an integrated system could look like. And if we could have kind of the same look and feel across the state, I think visitors would feel a lot better. They'd be able to know that, hey, when I stop at the next stop, I'm going to see the same kind of information and be able to get the same kind of help.
The emphasis seems to be on maximizing information for the traveler, and in that sense, maximizing economic gain from visitors, I suppose, to, as you mentioned, getting them off the freeway or getting off the highway and getting to spend some money in the communities. You have to make sure, though, I'm sure, that you're still being nice to the people who really just need to stop and go to the bathroom.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, like we said, safety and cleanliness are the absolute number one things that motorists are looking for. And while we have them there, if we can inspire them and let them know about places that are nearby, then that's where we plug into that economic development piece and help support economic development in these local communities. But yeah, absolutely. People are stopping to use the facilities and to let their pets out and let their kids run around. That's absolutely the first part of our mission.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maddie McGregor and Annie von Dommitz are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange from Oregon Travel Experience. And so, Annie, is there a state that, for example, is leading the way with really putting out some great interactive displays or making clever use of Wi-Fi or messages to mobile devices or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, we've looked at several other states, and some states are doing really great things. Every state is different in how they're funding mechanisms work and what they're allowed to do in rest areas. So not all of them translate directly over to Oregon, but there are some states that are doing some pretty great things. I think in general, states as a whole are not doing very much with the electronic, you know, kind of digital media or providing information for rest area or for in rest areas for visitors in a digital format, except for the states that have really fancy welcome centers. So it seems like the welcome centers are where most states are putting their emphasis on new technologies. So in that way, we're really doing something different by having them, you know, looking at how we can use technology in rest areas that aren't necessarily staffed with visitor folks, like with welcome center staff. So it'll be interesting to see how that all works out.
And it's not just limited to rest areas, I would think. I mean, if you're in charge of the historical marker program as well, you could potentially set up a system whereby people would sign up for updates through their mobile device and then get pinged when they get with their GPS within a few miles of one of the historical markers.
Yeah, we actually have already done something with that. Google created a Google Field Trip. And so all of our marker and tree locations are on Google Field Trip. So people can already download that free app, and it will ping them as they get close to our markers and trees as they go throughout the state. So I encourage people to do that. It's really fun, actually. I've learned a lot about other things besides just our markers and trees as I travel. So.
And what's the total number of assets that Oregon Travel Experience oversees, Annie Von Dommitz? I mean, between the historical markers, the Heritage Tree Program, the rest areas.
Ooh, I don't have. Are you talking about
just all the different things you'd have to address, things that would have to be included as part of what you maintain? And
oh my goodness, that's a lot.
Hundreds, thousands.
Well, we have like close to 3,000, over 3,500 sign customers. We have 20 rest areas. And then, Annie, I don't know your tree and heritage marker counts.
We have 63 heritage trees, and we have 114 historical markers.
All right. So
yeah, a few things.
All right. So the overall assessment then from this summer's trip is, I gather a sense that things need to be updated, but what's the move ahead now? Where do things go from here?
Right. Well, we're looking at the short term, the midterm, and the long term planning. So we have in the short term, we're going to be making some cosmetic changes, updating some panels that are woefully out of date, fixing, you know, mildewed areas and some rotting wood and graffitied plexiglass so that these kiosks are a little bit more inviting than they are right now. So, and then we're going to be doing a pilot project, and Annie can probably fill you in on that, with Clackamas County.
Yeah, we're going to be doing kind of a midterm pilot project at the French Prairie Rest Area, which is one of our largest, it is our largest rest area.
That's the one near Wilsonville?
Right, yeah, and it gets 407,000 visitors each month, average.
Each month?
Yes,
yes.
Wow.
It's a lot. It shocked us when we finally got those counts. So we're working with Clackamas County to redo the kiosk there. They're going to be putting in a digital kiosk that will give people some better local information. They can make itineraries and get really good information at a digital kiosk self-serve. And then we'll be redesigning that kiosk as well to make it a little bit more open and inviting and trying out a few other technologies, possibly digital poster board type displays, that type of thing, see if we can get some video in there. And so it'll be really interesting with different finishes and stuff to see how that works. And hopefully that'll be something then that we can replicate over the system.
We look forward to talking to you sometime in the future to see how this all works out.
Maddie
McGregor is Communication Officer, Annie Von Dommitz, Community Assets Officer at Oregon Travel Experience. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you, Jeffrey, for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
You bet. Vents Day is coming up on the Jefferson Exchange. Here's Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 25th of September, 2013. It was on this day, 1789, the Congress approved 12 amendments to the Constitution, which had been recently ratified. 10 of them would eventually become the Bill of Rights that we know today. It was George Mason from Virginia who had been disappointed in the Constitution. He thought that it gave too much power to a central government and with little protection for individual rights. So he lobbied for the amendments. And after a few years, Thomas Jefferson joined the cause, and George Washington and James Madison. In the summer of 1789, Madison introduced 17 amendments before Congress. That was narrowed down to 12, which were approved on this day, 1789, sent to the states for ratification, of which 10 were ratified, which protect, among other things, a citizen's right to freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, a well-organized militia, and a speedy and public trial, and freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, and excessive bail, freedom from the quartering of troops in your home, and self-incrimination. And Article 10, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. One of the amendments which did not succeed would prohibit members of Congress from voting to raise their own pay without allowing the voters to have a say. It's the birthday of William Faulkner, born New Albany, Mississippi, 1897. Wrote 19 novels, 18 of them set in the South, 14 of them set in a fictional version of his hometown, Oxford. William Faulkner, who said the South's the place for a novelist to grow up because the folks there talk so much about the past. When I was a little boy, there'd be sometimes 20 or 30 people in the house, mostly relatives, aunts, uncles, cousins, and second cousins. Some may be coming for overnight, staying on for months, swapping stories about the family and about the past, while I sat in a corner and listened. That's where I got my books. Faulkner wanted to get into the First World War. He was rejected by the U.S. Army Air Corps because he was only 5'6", so he applied for the Canadian Royal Air Force. He was still in training up in Canada when the war ended. Nonetheless, he returned home to Oxford, Mississippi, wearing an officer's uniform, and claimed to have been injured and to have a silver plate in his head, and went to Ole Miss for a few semesters as a war veteran, even though he'd never finished high school. It's the birthday of Francine Duplessis Gray, born in Warsaw, 1930, the novelist, short story writer. Her first novel was Lovers and Tyrants, came out in 1976. And it's the birthday of the children's author and cartoonist Shel Silverstein, born in Chicago, 1930, an author who avoided the press, refused to give interviews, did not go off on book tours. Here's a poem for today by Hilaire Belloc, The Yak. As a friend to the children, commend me the yak. You will find it exactly the thing. It will carry and fetch. You can ride on its back or lead it about with a string. The Tartar who dwells on the plains of Tibet, a desolate region of snow, has for centuries made it a nursery pet, and surely the Tartar should know. Then tell your papa where the yak can be got, and if he is awfully rich, he will buy you the creature, or else he will not. I cannot be positive which. The Yak by Hilaire Belloc. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Garrison Keillor with today's edition of the Writer's Almanac here on the Jefferson Exchange.